Hi there, and welcome back to this series on the core social psychology motives, and to part three of the discussion around the first core social motive, belonging. This time we're taking a look at self-categorization and pro-social behavior. In the previous articles, we've talked about the fact that people, individuals, have both a personal identity and a social identity. And when we psychologically depersonalize our self-identity, it produces group behaviors, which can become group norms. This also generates group processes for cooperation, influence, and a group cohesiveness. Think back to the social cohesion through the common enemy. As a species, we can actually operate both as an individual and a group member. And it's the element of this process of seeing ourselves as belonging to a group that is called self-categorization. Now, self-categorization theory, see Turner, 1985, which shares the foundations with social identity theory, has been defined as a theory of the nature of the self that recognizes that perceivers are both individuals and group members, explains how and when people will define themselves as individuals and group entities and the implications, and examines the impact of this variability in self-perception, the I to we, for understanding of mind and behavior. This theory provides definitions of when a group is a group and explains how the human mind works in and is influenced by constructing and defining human beings as social animals and not simply individuals, a singular mind built of a single set of neurotransmitters. Individuals, groups, and intergroup relations are present. We feel the experience of other members of the same self-category through our sense of belonging, and what is done to them is also done to us. When we're looking at change situations, particularly those in an organization with high capacity to adapt, adaptive capacity here relates to the capacity of systems, institutions, humans, and other organisms to adjust to potential damage, to take advantage of opportunities, or to respond to consequences. We find people tend to share responsibility for the larger organization's future, as well as identifying with specific roles and functions within the process. Where there's a high self-categorization within an organization, it often benefits from the sense of identification of the group and the associated social cohesion, along with the members' commitment to the group itself. And so self-categorization has potential for increasing productivity and employee satisfaction, which in turn leads to higher performance. And in a change program, this can create a strong collaborative impetus between both leaders and staff to drive forward and embed the vision behind the change. This concept of self-categorization is often applied to topics such as social cohesion, the group social cohesion. See the previous article or listen to the previous podcast on this. Group polarization, social influence, and collective action. Leadership and personality type identification and realignment. And it's highly relevant when organizations care about their performance and change capacity and are in the process of designing and subsequently deploying internal change. So, okay, now we've considered self-categorization and its impacts on change and group social psychology, driving belonging and general directional loyalty to the change or conversely against the leaders, let us take a look at pro-social behaviour. Now, pro-social behaviour is concisely defined as voluntary behaviour intended to benefit another. See Eisenberg, 2006. But can also be considered as follows. Pro-social behaviour is a broad class of behaviours defined as involving cost for the self and resulting in benefit for others. It's worth noting it's closely associated to positive social actions because where pro-social behavior results in net benefits for both the receiver and the giver of the pro-social act, It is referred to as mutualism. But where it benefits others but confers a net cost to the giver, pro-social behaviour becomes altruism. If you have an interest in deeper understanding of the concept of connection between altruism and pro-social behaviour, I'd recommend reading Sociology of Altruism and Pro-Social Behaviour by Raphael Wittek, Renny Beckers. You can find it in the International Encyclopedia of the Social and Behavioural Sciences, 2nd edition, 2015. Now this sub-element, pro-social behaviour, is highly associated with personal wellness benefits, because living and working in harmonious conditions results in less stress-related effects on both the physical and psychological person. When stress is experienced, such as when feeling outside the social group, the brain will trigger a release of cortisol, which in small doses is fine, and that's what it's meant to do. But in prolonged periods of overproduction, it has harmful effects on our cognitive functions of memory and state of mind, often leading to depression and other mental conditions. Counter to this, the act of helping others will result in releases of oxytocin, and in a positive social environment, such as a socially cohesive group, where there's often laughter, happiness, and shared experiences, chemicals like dopamine, endorphin, and serotonin are also released as we experience the pleasures of those. Now, clearly, we're going to gravitate towards pleasure. Think of the threat-reward response system behaviours, which is why we have an inherent need to belong. And so we learn that pro-social behaviour helps us in achieving this drive by connecting us with other pro-social beings and thus to the group they belong to. Now you may be thinking that if this is the case, then why aren't we all pro-social in our behaviour and belong to one big group? Well, it turns out, unsurprisingly, that the acts of help, kindness and support are more focused on those in the group than those outside the group, called in-group favouritism. Because the group members define themselves as in the same social category, see self-categorisation above, having the experience of a shared social identity or a common direction, such as the common enemy-driven social cohesion, and a sense of we rather than I. When we place the lens of organisational change over this motive sub-element, we can see that a pro-social group being helpful and supportive to all group members will be highly satisfied in their membership. And when this group is organisational, or even just a change programme team, they will have higher job satisfaction because their experience is more enjoyable, and this will lead to higher productivity and performance, as well as commitment to the vision or mission of the change being undertaken. This will inevitably lead to more successful and persisting change outcome. It is because of this that pro-social behaviour should be the driving force behind organisational culture, team development, and cooperation-based values, and can successfully give a human face to leadership and performance management. Now, I mentioned change capacity a little earlier, and I want to bring that together into how it is impacting change success. And I thought I might quote Connor, 2006, as he puts it so well in his book Managing at the Speed of Change, where he wrote, "People can only change when they have the capacity to do so. Ability means having the necessary skills and knowing how to use them. Willingness is the motivation to apply those skills to a particular situation. If you lack either ability or willingness, it is unlikely that you will successfully adapt to change." We have leaders, especially those driving change, practice pro-social behaviours and focus on developing change capacity. It's a hugely motivational, and actions such as emphasising people's strengths will build esteem, and encouraging self-improvement and development, not just in those strengths, but also in the areas of weakness. So as a final thought, whenever you are involved in leading change, it's always a good approach to remind your teams of how competent they really are, and how they already have the skills to be successful in their part of the delivery of change and in the roles of the new normal that will result. Make use of even small expressions of gratitude, as this makes people feel socially valued, and increase equitable management as a display of procedural justice. This will result in the release of all of the positive neurochemicals mentioned, encouraging the members of the change group to collectively drive forward positively and supportively, getting pleasure and job satisfaction from delivering and evangelizing the change required to both improve the health and potential of the organization and themselves. Keep in the back of your mind too that lack of satisfaction or equity can create social comparison to concur, and this often leads to decreases in pro-social behavior. Well, that's it for this time. We've looked at self-categorization and pro-social behavior and its importance in change management. In the next part, we take a look at the final two sub-elements of the primary motive of belonging, terror management theory and broaden and build theory. As always, leave me comments, good, bad, or indifferent, and watch out for the next topic in a few weeks.